kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Entertaining show lined up for you today. To celebrate the release of the Xbox One X, we are going to be chatting with Sanatan Mishra of Witchbeam about their brand new Xbox One X release. Xbox One X, because it's 4K, it's sexy, it's gorgeous, and it's finally on Xbox. Assault Android Cactus, finally here. Y'all are going to need to play it. And as you heard by the ooh, Pernell's kicking off the show with me. Pernell, how you doing, man?
Happy that more people get to play Assault Android Cactus, apparently.
It's such a good game.
It is. It really is. I was addicted to it. I played quite a bit of it. And I am glad to see that it's getting a push outward, too, for more people to try.
Yep. So, finally out on the Xbox One in 4K.
It might be a bit of a spoiler for a future read for the interview or for a review, but do you know if they added anything to it?
They added, of course, 4K support, so it is fully enhanced for the Xbox One X, and there's developer commentary.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more details, just stick around to the second half of the show after a bunch of reviews.
Well, why not?
You better. Motherfucking better.
But I got things.
I will cut a bitch. I mean, come on. There's not even that many reviews this episode. Things are starting to slow down. It's all big AAA stuff. The indies are starting to ease up a bit. So, like, there's like not even double-digit reviews this episode.
What a travesty.
I know. Things are slowing down. It feels good. It feels good, man. So we're going to kick things off with Zvi. Hopefully I'm saying it right. Zvi the Ilvard Insurrection. What a name. Developed by Nihon Falcom, published by XSEED Games, released October 31st on Steam for $29.99. In a world where magic and technology exist side by side, vampire princess Alwyn must reclaim her ancestral castle and her magic alongside her unlikely ally, treasure hunter Ragna Valentine. They may make for an odd pair, but when they combine their talents, the sky's the limit. Pernell, what did you think of this game?
Spoiler alert, I guess it's Falcom, so it kind of, the answer is already in the pudding. But I have been enjoying this game since I got the review copy. It's, I guess the best way to describe it is like a light dungeon crawler with a Falcom touch. So the idea is that you are controlling two characters at once. One is a magic user and one is a melee attacker. And you alternate between them to use attacks relevant to their needs. So, like, Ragna gets something called an anchor gear, which sort of works like a chain whip of sorts. Like, you can swing it, you can punch with it, and it can get modifiers throughout the game that allow it to do different things. Like, most specifically, my favorite to this day is you can grab people and, like, kind of just walk around with them and then shoot them at other people, because that's actually kind of fun. Like, you can knock guys out of the sky with it. You can pull debris out of the way, like, as a puzzle item. And then in the case of Alwyn, she uses magic abilities, so she earns magic as the main draw, the main goal of the game's quest. You're walking around the different dungeons in the world trying to find her lost magic that was stolen from her by people that invaded and stole her castle from her. So she recruited Ragna by measures of which he would not have agreed to if he had a choice, I'm sure. But she recruited him to tag along with her on all this stuff because she can't beat them alone. So they are basically going to different dungeons, fighting monsters where that are holding her magic powers. And each time you beat one, you get a new type of magic for her based around the elements, like, you know, fire, wind, and water. And aside from the fact that those attacks have different properties, some enemies, at least from what I could tell, I might be wrong, but some enemies were strong or weak to certain elements. And also the elemental attacks have different, say, like tactical advancement, like ground is like the earth magic is a ground attack, so you can't hit guys in the sky with it. But the electric magic is an air attack, so you can launch and shoot bullets at people, or you can do smart things like combo between the two of them. So if you know an enemy's weak to ground, but you can't knock him out of the sky, you can switch to Ragna, you can grab an enemy, shoot it at the guy to knock him out of the sky, and then you can switch to her and start doing earth magic on him while he's knocked on the ground. It's a lot of fun comboing. And it's a surprise amount of depth for a game that really is a bunch of corridors, because the dungeons are literally corridors, like the typical, you know, like 90-degree turns. But there are different, like, dungeon elements that involve, like, puzzles, like hitting switches or various, like, larger obstacles that just kind of make travel a little more cumbersome and frustrating, like things that impede movement or things that enhance movement against your wishes.
Hitting switches. I wouldn't mind if this game hit the switch. Aha, aha.
Yeah, that's a good chuckle and an awesome point, because I would love to have this on the Switch. I would play that. This game would be awesome on the Switch. It's got that family-friendly element, though some of the dialogue is not so, because, again, it is Falcom, but it's not anything that I don't think would necessarily, like, hinder anything, and it's not like it really puts anybody off of the game. It's just, don't make this like, you know, something a five-year-old is going to play. But then why would you have your five-year-old playing games without you supervising anyway? I don't know.
I mean, let's not forget Doom is coming out on the Switch, like, this week.
That is true. Now, that's a game that's appropriate for your five-year-old. I don't know what people are slouching on. That's a five-year-old appropriate game.
Nice.
So, but not this one, though. Not this one. But, like, oh, another element of this game that's awesome is the fact that, being that it's a Falcom game, there's a lot of excellent characterization that takes place. There is a sort of character database in the game. And every time you meet a new character, it updates the database to add that character to it. And it gives you bits of information about them. So they're NPCs, but they're small bits of details relevant to make them relevant to each character to give them a bit of personality. And throughout the adventure, at different times, you can, like, say, go back to the different townships that you find in the game. And sometimes those characters will be doing different things or new things. And if you talk to them, you might get a new bit of dialogue, something more that teaches you more about the person, and then it updates the guide so that you can pretty much learn more and more about the characters. Like, why does the nun smoke so much in church? Maybe you'll find out by playing through the game and talking to her a lot. Why does the guy that runs the magic, the Hunter's Guild in town also run a museum? Gotta find out why he quit his job as a doctor. Nobody knows unless you talk to him. Stuff like that is really cool. And then there's another component related to dungeon diving that's really cool, like, too. So you're in a hunter's guild. So in typical hunter guild, quote unquote, fashion, you have a hunter's rank that increases as you play the game. And it's done by going into different dungeons. And those dungeons have various sectors in them. Say, for example, you enter the dungeon, there might be three pathways you can enter to start. But you can't unlock the other two until you get a certain spell or claw move that allows you to move or manipulate the environment. But when you enter whatever area you can go into, a certain gauge starts. I'm not sure if it's a timer plus some other variables that I don't know how they're gauging you on. And you play through the dungeon, and when you get to the end of it, they'll give you a grade, either gold, silver, or bronze, and that goes towards your hunter rank. And in addition to that, sometimes you find treasure in the dungeons too, which you can take back to the Hunter's Guild and sell for cash to donate to the museum. And that, I believe, that also affects your hunter rank. And then every time your rank goes up, the guild gives you a cool reward, different piece of equipment, maybe an ability, who knows. Sky's the limit. But it's an awesome little element to kind of get you to go back to the different dungeons and get, you know, higher ranks on stuff. And there's another element to it. By virtue of the fact that different entrances to different sections of dungeons require different abilities, sometimes they pretty much incentivize you to come back to dungeons later to try them again or to find other areas you couldn't access before. But since combat is so fun, at least in my opinion, I don't think that'll end up being a chore. I actually enjoy going back to the dungeons and finding new stuff.
Nice. I also want to say I enjoy the visuals of this. I was going to say something really stupid like, oh, it reminds me a lot of Gurumin. But they're both Falcom, so
I'm about to say it should remind you of Gurumin. It really should. It's got the same squanty, you know, character sprites that they put in Gurumin.
Yeah, though this it's not like 4K like we're talking about with Assault Android Cactus, but it's still, I like the look of the game. I enjoy Falcom's style.
Oh yeah, like honestly, I'm not sure if Falcom will ever end up going along like the 4K route. They've always been privy to keeping things, you know, not necessarily like bare bones, but you like to keep minimalistic so that, like, you know, more people can enjoy their stuff.
Falcom likes to kiss. They like to keep it simple, stupid.
Better believe it. So take them up on it and play their simple games, because they're a lot of bloody fun. But I honestly, I mean, Falcom is not, they're far from infallible, I'll admit. I'll be the first to admit it. But even with that said, their track record for good games versus bad games is definitely on the good side for games that have come to the States. And I feel as though this one is another one that falls into that positive bubble. Oh, I even mentioned another thing about this, which is kind of funny. So I hoard items in my games. So, and I sometimes like to keep my levels low, not advance my character, because that's what crazy people do. So the way this game is designed, when you get hurt, you might need to heal yourself. And there are, while you can heal at save points that are little throughout the map, there are other things you can use called food items to replenish your health. But in addition to the food giving you health back, food is also the only way you can get experience in the game. Enemies that you defeat do not give you experience. Only eating does. If only the real world worked that way. But alas, it does not. But in this game, you eat food to gain experience. So in the event that you're kind of accustomed to getting the tar kicked out of you in dungeons, you will naturally get stronger because you keep healing yourself with food, which is attributed to experience points, which will result in an advancement. So it's an interesting concept there. And I find myself playing
that is quite unique.
It is. I actually like it, though it also makes me find myself being a minimalist and trying to heal as little as possible so I don't use food, so I don't level up. But then I get to a boss who's strong, and I got to eat food to level up. So I'm just in the middle of the boss room, like gorging myself on whatever food I've got and watching the number jump. It's pretty funny.
Man, but whatever mechanic they use could never be as weird or as horrible as fucking Lunar Dragon Song.
What did they do in that game? Because I avoided it due to all the horrors I heard about it.
You had to choose what kind of mode you wanted with battles, where after a battle, depending on the mode that you're in, you can either get experience or get items and gold.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, either or.
Basically, it's like, how do we double the length of this game? I know.
Pretty much.
No, thank you. I'm glad I skipped that darn abomination.
But for Zwei, again, I hope I'm saying it right. I think that's...
Panzer Dragoon's Y? That's what I think.
Zwei? Zwei? The Ilvad Insurrection? So for $30, what is your verdict?
I recommend you skip Lunar Dragon Song, but do not skip this. It's a very fun game. The price is right. There's a fair bit of content to it. And due to the fact that you'll be going back to old dungeons, and like I said, in my opinion at least, you'll probably want to go back to old dungeons because you'll like beating the crap out of stuff. Gameplay is simple, but fun and effective. A very fun game, highly recommended by me. And most likely, who knows, you'll beat this game and want to move on to other East, Falcom titles like the Ease games if you haven't played those yet.
Fuck yeah, man. Love the Ease games. And hopefully we'll see this hit the Switch like we joked about earlier. That'd be really, really cool if it did.
It really would be. I wonder if they could make that port happen. Because this game originally came out in, I think, 2008.
I don't know. Xseed, if you're listening, let's make this shit go down.
Mm-hmm. As you heard, Switch is making that money. You get a fair bit of scratch.
Oh, man. Switch is fucking blowing up, man.
And it actually bought my... I didn't expect to even do this because... Contrary to what I won't say a lot, but I think it's more like me and like two other people in the world, but it's contrary to what people like me think, achievements and trophies have a lot of pull in games. And as a result of that, I didn't expect it, but I bought my very first transplant game. And what I mean by that is a game that was developed on the PS4, but also ended up getting released on the Switch. I ended up buying it for the Switch. Did not expect to, because I was like, well, I want my trophies, whatever. And then I was like, Knights of Azure 2.
Ah, how is that? I've been wanting to
You're asking the wrong guy. Because keep in mind, you're talking to, I got towers of shit here I'm trying to weed through. And now I do reviews. So the towers just sit. But I intend to get to it sooner than later. But I honestly enjoyed the first Knights of Azure. So I don't doubt that the sequel is going to also be a pretty fun game. It's an action like battle system. So... Which is honestly, for NIS games, that's a rarity, I would say. Usually theirs are turn-based.
It's not actually a NIS game. They only handled like distribution in America.
Gust. I forgot, it's Gust, right?
Yeah, and it was published by Koei Tecmo.
Yeah, because they have a weird association. It's like NIS publishes it, but it's always like Gust or Idea Factory. Like the majority of the time is Gust and Idea Factory is dropping their stuff.
Yeah. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Well, Pernell, thanks for coming on and chatting about that game. It's a quickie one and done for you tonight.
I know. Now I can get back to wondering why I ate these spicy wings earlier. Nice. Why the hell did I do that? Oh, God, why?
So, Pernell, for your final thoughts, why did you eat those wings?
Because I like to suffer. That's the only thing I can think of. It's the only thing that comes to mind. Tasty suffrage.
All right, next up, Chris Taylor is joining. Chris, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Fantastic?
Fantastic.
That sounds fancy. Fancy and fantastic.
It's fancy.
We are so stupid. You know what's like not stupid, though? How's this for a second?
Huh?
The first game you're here to talk about tonight.
Oh, boy. I'm here to talk about games today.
Indeed. You are. That's what you come on. That's what everyone comes on the show for, to talk about games, because it's a gaming podcast.
Nobody wants to know the real you.
No, not even, not just even myself. Not even my family.
They just want to talk to you about the games. It's all the games. It's all a game to them.
It is. So do you want to talk about games?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Cool. First game you were here to talk about is called Splasher, developed by Splash Team, published by Plugin Digital. This one released on the Switch October 26th for $14.99. Splasher is a fun and challenging 2D platformer filled with humor and surprises. Armed with a paint cannon, you'll face the dangers of the Ink Corp Mega Factory in order to save your companions, the Splashers, and put an end to the Machiavellian projects of the evil boss, Le Docteur. Chris, what did you think of Splasher?
Well, for one, I thought it was a water gun that he has, because it washes paint off the walls. Is it a paint gun?
It shoots paint, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess it does in certain places. Well, okay, yes. So, yeah, you are this guy, or girl. I actually don't really know. It's an individual with purple hair, against the, as you say, machinations of Ink Corp. I guess it's Ink Corporated. Is what that means? I don't know. So what we have here is a really, really super fast, tiny, tiny sprite, like platform extraordinaire, like, also kind of a run and gun a little bit, but it's really more for assisting the platforming than it is to, like, really, like, the enemies aren't super aggressive in this game. Like, if you didn't know any better, you'd think they weren't even hostile, but you still gotta blow them all up. And actually, this does kinda look more like a girl. I don't know, maybe it's a boy. for instance, when you're running through and you, like, shoot one of these, like, one-eyed baddies and stuff, like, it'll cause platforms to appear. Or sometimes there's an enemy that'll run after you when it sees you, and then your recourse is actually, it's a bull, so, like, you have to just get out of its way and let it drop itself into the mutagen. I don't think it's actually mutagen, I think they have to call it something else. But it turns you into, like, this awful bloated corpsey thing if you land in it, so I'm calling it mutagen. In honor of Mutagen Man, may he rest in peace. So after you play through, like, the first level, which it really cleverly sort of tells you what to do with just, like, little pictures that are around. Like, I think that's kind of what, like, the cool platformers do nowadays. It's like show as few words as possible, but show you, like, in graffiti or something like that, like, what to do. You get through the first few stages, you do fight bosses, which is really cool because I really enjoyed the boss fights. It's very clever. It's like, you can't just go around shooting things. There actually is, like, an element of strategy to just about everything. And some things you can straight up shoot. But anyways, then it takes you to, like, this hub of, like, so many levels. It looks like there's just a million levels in this game. So that's probably where your $14.99 is going, is just sheer content. But yeah, like, you go in and it's kind of like a cross between Super Meat Boy and Mario Sunshine.
I've been saying Meat Boy and Splatoon.
Yeah, there you go. Although, like, and there's certain things about it that are really clever. Like, the way that they do moving platforms in one stage is that one gun that's, like, attached to the background shoots paint onto the surface, which if it's red paint, it means you can just run straight up it. It's like a sticky stuff thing, and you can really jet. I mean, your character moves really fast, and a little bit like Cave Story, actually, I noticed. Or again, your Super Meat Boys and things like that. But it's also got that like super long jump and stuff. So you get a lot of control over your character. And yeah, when there's red, you can like run straight up it, or, you know, even like run on the ceiling and stuff, but it washes off if you shoot it with your water gun or paint gun or whatever. Or in this case, there's like, it was painting the wall and then another jet would come right behind it and wash it off. So you had to follow the paint while it was still on the wall. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool way of doing that. So, on top of the regular challenges of getting through the levels, you also collect your friends, and each of them has a letter assigned to them, and of course the letters spell out Splasher, I think, or Splashed or something like that. Either way, I actually can't remember. It's been a while since I rescued all my friends. It adds this whole other element to the game where it's like you start to get like these becomes like a sort of a collectible thing as well. And of course, this game, you know, they knew what they were doing, so they've added in like a speedrun mode and like certain speedrun counters and things like that.
And they actually worked with speedrunners for these modes.
Yes, that's awesome. It totally, you can tell, like, it's got everything that you need if you're one of those kind of folks that like to play through a platformer and then completely master it and like show off your skills for the internet. I don't know. That might be a thing now. but yeah, it's all there. And, so yeah, the other, you know, the visuals, really, really super bright, cartoony, looks great in HD. It looks great on the Switch, just portable mode. It utilizes, I think, all three controller modes that the Switch does, and it actually has you choose right at the beginning of the game, like, what kind of controller setup you're going to use. So I really like that, because I actually had trouble with another game for that when I was trying to play a two-player arcade game. It was like, I had to kind of figure out how to, like, set it all up, but this game has it all done for you, so that's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, $15, your verdict?
$15 if you're into platformers, speedy, cool, like, you know, shooter thingies that are really, really hard, and eventually you'll master them so well that you become, like, the master of the universe of Splasher. Yes, absolutely, this is your game. It's solid as heck.
Awesome. I've been singing the praises of this game since I first saw it at GDQ, and holy shit, I'm so happy every time I get another version of this game for someone to review. I love sharing the joy of this game. It is so goddamn good.
It's very joyful, yes. You can really tell, like, that a lot of care and a lot of love went into this game, so just buy it just for that reason.
Indeed. Support indie devs. Do it.
Yeah! Do it!
Moving on, next game to talk about is called Shark Pool, developed by AK Arts. It released October 26th on iOS and Android. Is a free-to-play game. You could remove the ads for $3. Meet Shark Zuckerberg, gregarious intellectual, and also a great white that's out for blood. Zuckerberg has made his home in a cave off pristine ocean waters, but he's suddenly faced with a thorny problem. It turns out that humans of the previously alive variety also like the location, and having a built-in swimming pool are floating about uninvited. Take down the human scourge or die trying, our friend Jacob Garner wrote in an email review for this one, and a little bonus game because he's a dick like that, so let's read this. Shark Pool by AK Arts brings some fun arcade action to the iPhone. Humans have decided to build a swimming pool over where you live, so it's up to you to knock them off their rafts and presumably eat them. As each turn finishes, the enemies move closer to your home, and should they reach your home by the end of a turn, you lose a life. You can recruit other sharks to help you in your quest, and they'll follow where you are, where you fling the shark, creating a large chain that will attack your enemies multiple times. The game area is in a square, and you can bounce your sharks off the corners because it's like a pool game. Get it? So figuring out what angle is the best will definitely aid you in your play. The gameplay is solid, and it's a free-to-play game with in-game purchases to remove the ads and give you extra lives. The game is currently in Halloween mode, with zombies, mummies, and ghosts to attack instead of the people, and I actually prefer this version over the game's normal mode. Not sure how long this will stick around, so download it before they possibly change it. This is definitely one of the more addictive iPhone games I've played, and despite its simple gameplay, the game is deceptively challenging. It's a great game when you've got 5 minutes to kill, making it perfect for in-between classes, during a commute, etc. My only complaints about the game is that the sounds of the people getting hit become annoying very quickly and remind me of that Eastern European "you said it" friend character from Family Guy, and your third life only becomes available if you're willing to shell out some money, and that isn't permanent. I'd rather unlock that feature permanently instead of shelling out money every 5 games. Otherwise, this is pretty much a perfect iPhone game, and I highly recommend it. And while you do your review later, I'm probably going to download that. But Jacob has one more to talk about, because he does this to me, despite the fact that I don't have, like, any written information about this one. Like, this is just his own thing. He fucking...
Okay.
He continues on. This isn't a game that Joe gave me to review, as I've mentioned, but I've been meaning to discuss the free-to-play city-building game Avengers Academy, similar to The Simpsons Tapped Out, which I reviewed a long time ago. Again, something else I didn't give him to review. He just did it.
Why?
Because he's a dick. I don't fucking know.
Wow.
Where was I? Which I reviewed a long time ago. You were tasked by Nick Fury to build a college for a bunch of teenage Avengers. Naturally, there's some sort of secret behind this. And the plot so far has them realizing they may be clones, ripping off the classic MTV show Clone High, maybe? I miss that show, by the way.
It seemed like a pretty good show. I don't really remember much about it.
You send the Avengers on missions from the mission board, which can take them anywhere from one minute to 8 hours to complete. During those missions, doing those missions gives you coins as well as other items needed to level up your characters, which unlocks new costumes for them and grants you more currency when they do missions. Building various buildings and upgrading them allows new jobs to appear. You're constantly logging in multiple times a day to send them on new missions. The game is stingy as hell, much like the other Marvel title Contest of Champions. It will cost you a stupid amount of money to get the characters you want and get everything done. You can't send idle characters off to do missions and earn money, so if they aren't listed on the mission board, you could have a campus full of characters who aren't doing anything for you. The art looks pretty good for the most part. Along the voice acting could get grating after a while. Come on, Jacob, get your shit together.
Come on, this is a unsolicited, like, review. You should at least write it well.
Seriously, if he's just gonna send shit to me, I'm gonna tear him apart for these. You can earn new costumes for the different characters, some which unlock new missions. Some of them can only be had by getting crystals, the in-game currency that you generally have to pay for, although you can watch ads and slowly earn them. My biggest complaint about the game are the events, as they aren't explained particularly well. They have to include an FAQ with each one, and there are points where if you don't shell out the money, you aren't getting past a certain point in the event. Sure, the characters may become available and easier to earn down the road, like getting Daredevil, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, etc., when there was a Defenders event, but it was literally impossible to advance to the next stage during the Halloween event without shelling out $10. Unlike The Simpsons Tapped Out, there's no breather weeks between events. This game keeps them coming between Marvel movies, TV shows, comic book events, and of course, holidays. New content is great, but it doesn't give you a chance to build your campus and finish upgrading buildings in time for the next event. If a building is in the middle being upgraded, it can't be used, thus potentially blocking you from using it during missions. It isn't uncommon for an event to have ended at 6 p.m. Eastern, only for the next one to have started up by 10 p.m. later that evening. Event end times are the only times when I've spent money on the game, and that's because I was really close to unlocking a character, and I wouldn't have finished before the event ended. Avengers Academy has a lot of neat stuff going for it. Currently, they just started up an event based around Thor Ragnarok, but you better be prepared to shell out money to advance in this game. Thanks, Jacob, for sending
in... There's other ways to describe transactions than to say shell out money. Just saying. Yeah, yeah. Writer's tip.
Fuck you, Jacob.
Get you a thesaurus, Jacob.
Fucking Jacob.
Well, the next game I'm going to review is Pilot Wings on the Super Nintendo, and this is a game that...
no, for real, next game to discuss, the last one for you, is called King Oddball, developed and published by 10 Tons, released October...
10 Tons!
I love 10 Tons, and they've been doing so much on the Switch. because this one released the 30th on the Switch for $4.99, so it's a cheap one. End the world with boulders, blow up tanks, crash helicopters, squash puny humans, collapse structures, hurl boulders until nothing remains. End the world. Chris, did you end the world?
I feel like this is probably not like so much a hero as maybe an anti-hero. Just saying. Since your goal is to destroy the whole world. Okay, so King Oddball. It is odd in the sense that you are a rock with kind of an orcish like human face. Looks like you would probably be played by Ron Perlman in the film adaptation. You got a little what?
Oh my god, I never saw that before.
And him or Josh Brolin, one of the two, like they're interchangeable, right?
Close enough.
So yes, you play the goodly king who has taken it upon himself to use his giant purple tongue to sling boulders into tanks and various other earthly weapons of war in order to, I don't know, I guess destroy the world is the key, but you know, it's really a level clearing game. It's that. Let's just clear all the levels, gosh. But yeah, I suppose destroying the world is in there somewhere. Basically, I'm having a, like, so it's one of those kind of puzzle games, like one of those just instantly addictive things, like your Angry Birds. Basically, this is like Angry Birds that you don't have to be ashamed of.
Good way to put it.
Yeah, right? Cause it's like, and the other thing is the mechanic is slightly different. Instead of catapulting, angry A-vines at pigs, then you're actually swinging the boulder back and forth from your tongue from a set area in the level, sometimes in the middle, sometimes like, you know, on one side, just depending on what's needed. You have three rocks to throw, and you have to try and clear destroy all of the tanks. Usually there are more tanks than boulders, so what happens is that you have to employ one of the game's many, many, like, special tricks and, like, physics type things in order to, you know, make the most out of your thing. So if you bounce a boulder, let's say, off of a tank, which they do bounce off tanks, so sometimes they can ricochet onto another tank, and that will get your point. If it lands on your actual king's, like, head, then it will turn into a gold brick, and you can throw it again, and it's a little bit more powerful, I suppose. There are also, like, crates of TNT that are scattered throughout the level, and once you hit those, then it basically causes stuff to fly in all directions, and you just kind of hope that, you know, all the tanks get caught up in the blast. And oh man, when they do, it is bliss, because it is so cool the way that things go down in this game, like the explosions, the flinginess. It is basically one of those type of things that, like, they could have easily gotten more money for this, because, like, holy crap, it's so addicting.
It is so satisfying to chuck one boulder, like, knock it into a helicopter, which goes into another helicopter, and then those two helicopters, one goes into a tank, the other hits a TNT crate, bricks go flying, the rock somehow bounces around and goes back to you, so you catch the boulder back and get to use it again, and it's just like, break a motherfucker with a motherfucker. And I love
exactly,
it.
Yeah. And you know, like the other key component here is that, like, you really feel like you're the one responsible for the damage. It doesn't just feel like you lucked out. Like, you know, you tried a million times and it's so frustrating, and then you finally get it and you're just like, oh, I'm glad that's over. No, every time it's just like the best thing that ever happened to you. And the cool thing about it is that every few levels, like, you have to clear a grid of, I think, 3x3 levels, or is it 4x4? I guess I should look at the map over here or something.
I think basically 4x4, and then once you clear the 4x4, you go to another 4x4, which itself is a 4x4.
Yeah, so it's 4x4 blocks, and each set of 4x4s, except for, I think, the first one, has different things that you can actually unlock. So, like, the first one, you unlock achievements, which it's a 4x4 block of, like, all these achievements that you get. And then you get, like, the, what they call the Hall of Diamonds, where you try to basically do, like, your best run ever on like certain levels and stuff like that. And then they have the boom challenge, which actually replaces the boulders with grenades that, that then explode in all directions like a TNT box where you set them. And like they set the challenges to match. And there's like 20 whole levels just with the grenades before you move on to the next few stages. And then you unlock statistics for whatever reason.
So you know how good you were or how bad you were or how much shit you still have to do. Which, by the way, there is way too much shit to do in this game sometimes.
Yeah, it seems like there's a million billion levels.
That might be the accurate number.
Yes. And I can tell you that I know all this stuff, these things that I unlocked in, like, World 4, I guess, which means, let's 4 times 16, 64. That means that I played 64 levels in this game the first day, because that's what I unlocked. And I did all of the boom challenges. So that's 84 levels that I played in this game within the first few hours. So
that's called addiction.
Yes. And a little secret for the viewers at home. I've been playing it this entire review too. I just beat 8 more levels while we were talking.
It's okay. I just downloaded Shark Pool. So, so I guess the only question left, you know, $5, okay. Verdict.
$5. Oh man, you're getting a steal out of this game. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do. This is the game you need to get. So this is one of those, like, you just absolutely have to get it because this is so good. And I'm serious. It's just so good.
I agree. And especially at $5, like, they easily could have charged 10 or 15 for this, but they didn't because they're awesome.
I would say that's rather nice, which is one of the things the game tells you when you clear a level. Like, oh, rather nice.
So good. So good. Yeah. I really love 10 tons. Like, I think every single game they've put out has been absolute quality.
Yeah. I mean, if this is the way they're going, these guys are, you gotta be looking out for these guys. Cause, this is some serious stuff here.
And, if you enjoyed this one, I'm not sure if, Baseball Riot or Tennis in the Face are going to hit the Switch, but if they do, I'll make sure to put you on those.
Hooray. Those both sound great. I love the titles just by themselves. And yeah,
Told them, I think the In the Face should have been an entire series of games, like Baseball in the Face, Football in the Face. It's just Tennis in the Face is such an incredible title for a game.
That really is. Yeah. And, the only thing I can say about this game is that, yeah, it's possible that you could look at the stupid looking King Ron Perlman character and be like, oh, this looks kind of dumb. I'm not sure I want to play this because it looks dumb. Don't let that detract you. You're a fool. Just download the game and play it to death forever.
Sounds good. And I agree with you 100%. But Chris, it's been good having you on. It's always fun having you on. And I know that you'll be back again soon. Any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Make sure to tune in next week where I'm going to be reviewing Lethal Enforcers, Dungeons & Dragons, Warrior of the Eternal Sun, Booger Man, A Pick and Flick Adventure, and Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Nice.
All in an email. And I won't use grammar. You can't make me.
You dick. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called JASM, which stands for Just Another Shooter with Electronic Music, which is an incredible game title. Developed and published by Stas Shostak. I hope I said that right. Released October 5th on Steam for $5.99. Do you need any reason to shoot your enemies in game? Because JASM doesn't give you one. Just you, your weapons, crazy beats, and enemies. And you need to shoot every one of them, and it's up to you to make it the most hilarious and explosive way. Covering this one, Tom Miller. Tom, how are you doing?
Oh, everything's going all right over here.
Did you have fun with JASM?
Yeah, I had a great time, actually. And, like, I gotta say, like, 2017 is, like, a really good year if you like twin stick shooters. Because, like, between this and, like, earlier this year, there was Next Machina and Serious Sam Bogus Detour. And this is another, like, really good entry in the genre. So it's an arcade-style shooter. You got the twin stick controls, so, you know, you're aiming and moving around and trying to strafe around things. This one is... it's a little bit different of a take on it. It's everything is very, very low poly, but it still looks really like everything moves very fluidly. And pretty much all the objects in the game have physics to them as well, so you can shoot them with your guns or push them around. There are times when you can almost have like a bit of a Metal Gear Solid thing. You can get into a box and just like kind of sneak your way past enemies. The goal is to, you know, destroy everything in sight without dying yourself. but there's a lot of different ways to go about doing it. You also have quite an arsenal of different weapons that you can choose from at any time. And so, like, you have, like, so many different options at your disposal at any time. And also, you know, yeah, it is such a great title for a game, too. It's, like, the most... it's like the most self-deprecating and nonchalant title ever. It's just like, yeah, okay, here's another one. but the fact that they mention the electronic music in the title is, I mean, it's worth it because it has a really great score with some really cool beats to it and really nice sound effects too. It just like you really feel the explosions and you really just kind of feel like you're in danger at all times. So that's cool. This game does have a really steep difficulty curve, and I did wind up dying actually several times on the tutorial stage the first time I played it.
Nice.
And it's actually maybe the only game I've ever played where you can actually die on the menu screen.
How?
You because the menu screen, you're actually the character still, and you're like driving around it, and you can like the music and sound effects volume sliders are things that you can actually physically push around as your character. it's kind of weird to explain, but then yeah, you can just drive off the edge and die too. So you actually get a Steam achievement for that, which is pretty nice.
That is incredible.
And the achievement is called "Of course you can." Which I like.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, this game is really difficult, though, and, you know, it's something where it really does affect the way you have to play, because so many of these games, you do end up just kind of running in, guns blazing, and if you do that in this game, you're just going to die, so you have to really kind of be strategic about it, and kind of bait enemies out a lot of the time, or, like, just kind of choose, you know, how you're going to approach the situation. I don't know, I think it's really cool. And even though I did get frustrated at it, I've had a really good time playing it.
And that name, I mean, come on.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm guessing there's not much of a story to the game?
As far as I can tell, there is absolutely no story to this game. and in the blurb that you read right at the beginning of it, it's like, I think they kind of consciously tried to keep it as story-free as possible. Which I respect, you know?
It wears it on its sleeve that there is nothing of any substance to this game except shooting shit. Which sometimes that's what you need.
Yeah, definitely. One other thing that I thought was kind of cool is that the levels are partially randomized. So every time you die, you have often a slightly different layout to the rooms in a level. And it just kind of mixes things up a little bit. And I don't know. I think that's kind of cool. It gives it a little bit of extra replay value.
Nice. So I got to know, $6. What's your verdict?
Oh, definitely. If you're into twin stick shooters, I think it's definitely worth giving this one a shot. And it does take a little bit of getting used to, just with the controls are a little bit more twitchy than maybe they need to be. But it's still so much fun. And for $6, I'd say it's definitely worth checking out.
Sounds good. I might have to grab this one myself because yeah. I love ridiculous games and, you know, that title, Jason. I mean, press X to Jason, maybe? Jason!
Good one.
Oh, man. Well, Tom, thank you for covering this one. It's always good having you on. Any final thoughts?
Oh, just, you know, it's, you know, getting to be, it's November and that's, you know, it's 2 months left of the year. That's
your
cool.
Final thoughts are always my favorite thing. All right, next game to talk about is called Yomiwari Midnight Shadows, developed by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America, released October 24th on Steam, Vita, and PS4 for $29.99. The dark is no place to be alone. After a beautiful show of summer fireworks, two young girls begin to make their way home. However, a mysterious attacker separates them, and both must brave the haunting night filled with unspeakable terrors and survive the darkness. Our good friend Henry Jones is covering this one. Henry, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Just all right?
Just, you know, enjoying the morning being 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, close enough.
I don't have to work till 4, so, you know, why not?
Pretty much, yeah. So, what did you think of Yomiwari?
This actually surprised me. I like to think I'm a pretty good survival horror fan, and I know all the good stuff, but this kind of went under my radar. It's actually a sequel to Yomiwari Night Alone, I believe it is, and it covers similar ground, but the reason I hadn't heard of it was because the first one didn't sell very well, and you know, the people who do know about it like ported the physical copies, and now it's about $130 to $170 to get a physical copy.
Holy shit.
I'm sure you can find the digital one available somewhere, but so, you know, I guess it's old enough that Nisa got the sequel. So what this is a survival horror game with involving, you know, two little girls, Yui and Haru, and it starts very grimly. You kind of get an idea of what's going on. Like, there's the main story synopsis, and then there's the actual plot you get into, where the tutorial is kind of has a grim result. I won't spoil it, but it gives you a good idea what you're going for. So you are Haru most of the time, trying to figure out where Yui is, and Yui just keeps disappearing elsewhere and showing up, and it's like, what's happening? Where am I? And then she runs to an unfortunate point, and then you switch to Haru trying to catch up with her. And Haru is trying to navigate this town. It's a very Japanese town, and there are suddenly spirits all about. Some of them are just there for jump scare or show, like there's an eye that bounces through a house or something to that effect. And then there's the ones that will actually kill you in one shot, and that's what all of them can do. So you have to be, you're a little girl, you don't have any weapons to help you, so you either have to run away from them or you have to hide from them or, you know, outsmart them. Some of them are afraid of light. Some of them are attracted to your light, and some of them have various strategies, like you can throw a paper airplane and they will go fetch the paper airplane. You can run past them. So your only things is to distract them, or you can get a black trash bag and hide, which is a weapon, not really a weapon, but an item you get later in the game.
Hmm.
Either that or you hide behind signs or bushes until they go away. So you have to navigate through this town and figure out where you're going next and try to find Yui. And then you generally find your way into these buildings, like you'll go through a library or a haunted house, and they will basically have different rules. And some of them are understandable. Like when you go to the library, it has be quiet and no running. So there are a ton of enemies in there, but they don't attack you if you don't run or you don't make noise. So, or you go to this haunted house where you guys basically go room to room reliving whatever tragedy befell the place. And it gives you a hint on how to tackle the boss. What I like about this is the storytelling is very subtle. It's the basic plot is just like, oh, I have to go find Yui. And then Yui's, where am I? But once you get to the areas, it's very visual in its storytelling or in its hints. Like, you can figure out how to get through the game very easily, but the thing is, the visual hints are very subtle and you can miss them. Some of them are like, don't use fire in this place. It's very flammable, and that's a hint on how to defeat the boss. And then some of them is telling you what not to do. Like I said, be quiet. And there's this constant enemy, which is a giant monster with hands and eyes and scissors, a giant pair of scissors that can cut your head off. And it's afraid of dolls for whatever reason. So that just gives you a hint on what to do, because it's a reoccurring enemy you will find. And you have to figure out, okay, I can't fight this. It's not leaving me alone. I've got to figure out what to do. So you'll be in this one room where it doesn't tell you what to do, but you'll hear like something smashing, and then you'll realize, oh, it's these desks and they have glass over them. So once they smash open the right thing, you can get what you need to leave. So that's what I liked about it. The atmosphere is pretty good. There's not a lot of music for the most part, except at the beginning and at the end. So what they use is a lot of sound effects and your beating heart, which is part of the system. Since, you know, the girls are little and don't really know how to deal with monsters, like, and ghosts, they kind of get really afraid when they get around them. So you can run around all day when the monsters are not in the area. Once they get in the area, they kind of freeze a little bit, and you can't really dash about a lot, and you can't really do a whole bunch, but you've got to figure out how to get around these things, and that's the main part, which some of the times I don't really like, because it feels like, oh, they just didn't want to make a game with fighting mechanics. But this one, it works, because, you know, you're who you are. You can't fight these things, and even if you could, they're ghosts.
Yeah, tough to fight ghosts.
Yep, and it's just figuring out, using your brain, figuring out what to do, and, you know, trying to outsmart and find your way around things, which is nice. The only thing is, it gets a little irritating later on when the levels get longer and the bosses get more complicated. There are a couple times near the end where when you fight the bosses, they can't, you can't skip the cutscene that there's before the boss. The game is usually merciful, because when you go back to the save point, it saves your progress, it saves the items you found, and you can just go back to where you were very easily. But at the bosses, you can't skip the cutscenes, there's no way to speed them up, so every time you retry them, and you'll have to retry them a few times, because some of them, it's easy to tell what to do, sometimes it's not, and after the fifth try, you'll be like, okay, let's go, and there's this 30-second spiel, and
I guess you can't skip that stuff?
No, you can't. Ugh. So,
so the moral of the story is, don't die.
Yeah, don't die, although you do get trophies for dying. You get a gold trophy for dying 80 times, so maybe die in the regular game, because there are these shrines you can save at, and it's like old horror games where you have an expendable quantity of stuff you can use to save. Like, if you go to a shrine, you can throw a 10 yen coin at and save, but you only have a limited amount of them. Thankfully, they are, you know, placed plentifully around the area, so it shouldn't be so much of a problem. Because they actually do want you to explore, because they're collectibles, there are extra things you can find. And they don't really do much, but they do give you trophies and, you know,
and nice shit collectible to do. Books.
And shit to do. Because, you know, running from monsters or, you know, throwing rocks to make noise to distract them, it can get boring, so...
And I just love the fact that they give you a gold trophy for dying that much.
Yep.
Like, not even a bronze, not a silver, like a full-on gold trophy. Like, you suck so bad, we're going to give you a gold trophy to make it. That's like, I don't know, the participation trophy of this game, I
guess. Yeah. And they also give you a bronze one for dying less.
Oh, Lord.
You have to build up to it. And they actually get you a trophy for finding a trophy collectible.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's, The atmosphere is pretty good. I like the graphics are like if you play Dragon's Crown, that kind of animated feels hand painted, but it's not. There are a couple times where you can look at the sky and it's for very important moments and it looks very beautiful. It's a top down usually, but it'll tilt up to side view so you can see the sky. And so for important moments, and that really looks pretty. Like the atmosphere is good. Like I said, the music's not plentiful, but they'll have crickets chirping. You'll have your heart will be pounding. There'll be noise in the night, and that works for it.
So very atmospheric.
Yes.
Beautiful game.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is it's a bit thin. The main plot itself is very basic. You kind of get what's going on very early, and it just stretches it out until you get near the end, and then it stretches it out some more. It's like, okay, I have to get to this place, but there are gigantic spirits that will eat your soul if you go this way, so you have to go around. And what's going around is this giant maze-like dam and sewers. So I don't know if that needed to be there, but it pads out the game by about an hour or two. So
hey, keeps you busy. Keeps you off the corner, right?
Yeah. It's about 10 hours. I think it could have been a couple hours short if they really wanted it to, but I can't really complain too much since it's, what, $20?
So, $30.
$30. Okay. Yep. I mean, it's a little
$29.99.
Okay. So it's maybe, it's, if you remember the old horror games, like when it's Silent Hill 2 or Silent Hill 3, which are like 5 to 8 hours, but you were still getting a pretty good horror game, or in the case of Silent Hill 2 and 3, pretty damn good horror game. So it was worth it. So I would say it's a definite try it if you are a survival horror fan and you're looking for something because they don't release them as much as they used to, or if they do, they're not, they're like Deep Space or Dead Space 3 where there's something else to it because it has to be an action game because EA has to make the monies.
Yeah. A lot more action than horror anymore.
Yeah.
So overall, $30, you give it a try it, huh?
Yeah, it's a definite try it. I hesitate to do a buy it because it's a short game. And besides the collectibles, there's not really a whole lot to go back to. And some of the like frustrating boss fights, like the final boss fight was exceptionally frustrating because it comes in stages. And then the second stage, it doesn't give you any hints. It doesn't tell you what to do. And if you die, you have to redo the whole thing.
Oh, man.
And that got very tedious for me very quickly. And it doesn't make me want to rush back to the game and get all the collectibles. But other than that, it's a good game. It's, you know, a very good horror game. And it's not one you see a whole lot, just straight horror. So go ahead and try it if that sounds like your thing.
Sounds good. Well, Henry, thank you as always for coming on and talking about the game. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Just don't try to fight monsters if you are a little girl. It will not go well.
All right. And finally tonight, we're going to end the show with our good friend Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing tonight?
I'm hanging in there. How you doing?
One of those days. It's been a crazy weekend. Comcast. Mm-hmm. So, but fittingly enough, you're here to talk about Dead Exit, developed and published by Radiation Burn, released October 31st on Xbox One for $9.99. Dead Exit is an undead apocalypse base management card game. Play alone, with friends, or against friends. Just play smart and make sure you get the resources you need to escape the city. Royal, tell us about Dead Exit.
All right, so Dead Exit, it's a card game, but it's not the kind of card game that I was originally expecting, because the last tactical card game or computer card game I remember playing was Hearthstone. So, you know, there was an emphasis on getting rare cards or crafting cards. Dead Exit is none of that. You actually have a fairly fixed selection of different cards, but the strategy and the depth of the game is, not trivial. So you have a few different game modes to pick from. The main mode, you have a base or multiple bases sometimes. And it, I played in solitaire. I don't have anybody else to play with. My kids wouldn't get this.
Forever alone.
Yeah, forever alone. Just in screen game
I know the feeling.
I'm playing by myself. So you end up with a base, or as you crank up the difficulty, multiple bases. And these bases are three card slots on the outside of the base, three card slots inside the base. And the objective is, of course, to keep the dead from overrunning it and to stockpile resources, that is, people, vehicles, usually only one vehicle. Sometimes there's a need for more. And food and fuel. And at the same time, you can use your people, you can use plan cards, or you can use even food and fuel cards to try to get the dead away from your base or even lure them to other bases. And it's a pretty challenging game. You start off with a tutorial that basically kills you off. Spoiler. you know, shows you, here's how you play. And then you get overrun and says, don't worry, you were supposed to die. Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. Actually, that's kind of funny. There's even a Steam review that complains about that. They didn't pay good money to feel bad about themselves by losing in the first 5 minutes, something like that. QQ more. Whatever. But no, anyway, it's you know, it's a pretty interesting game, starting with just that mode. Then you can move on to a war mode where you're up against raiders. Actually, I'm sorry. The war mode is competing with other bases to take over, you know, more resources. There's also a mode where you go up against a raider that plays as like an AI, and you have to last for 3 weeks. And it goes day by day with new cards introduced for each day, too. So a few different ways to play the game. The core game is basically you get your cards, you take on the zombies, you collect people, you collect resources, and you try to get the hell out of there. Once you have enough food, you have enough fuel, and you have enough people, and you have a vehicle, you know, bus or a police cruiser or any of the other ones you have to choose from.
Nice. That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, it's got some neat touches to it. I mean, it's rendered in 3D, even though it's not really an action game. It's got a lot of cute details to it.
Well, if people are familiar with the game The Living Dungeon, also made by Radiation Burn, it's pretty much a board game come to life. And it feels like this is pretty much the same, but more geared towards cards instead of a board game.
Right. Okay. Yes. That's a fine example there. So you've got instead of players, there's like this mannequin sitting across from you to represent the AI when you're playing against the raider base. And there might be different other mannequin parts strewn about, and you're on top of this building, and you know it's very much an apocalyptic looking scene. It looks like something right out of Fallout 3 or something. And you know, they put a lot of shine into that. So you know, graphically, it's pleasant to look at. You don't play it for you know the action, obviously. It's very much a card game, but it's neat to look at, and there's a good sense of humor about it. You know, each of the cards, the different characters, they all have these smart ass nicknames, because you get like a thief, or you get a berserker, you know, or I'm sorry, a redneck or a bodyguard, and they all have different functions, and you know, their names are all goofy things like you know, the mechanic is like Slick or something. I can't remember all of them. But cute attention detail.
Speaking of the humor, I do appreciate the fact that you mentioned the mannequins are stand-ins for the other players. I like the fact that player faces are just taped to the mannequin heads.
That's correct, yes.
And even funnier, I think, is that if there's a female player, the mannequin breasts are covered with cards. Which I
noticed
think is
that.
Hilarious.
Yes, that's right. I remember you can use the right stick on the controller and look across, you know, just like point of view looking in a shooter or something. You can see all the different details around you, including, yeah, I saw that, hands around the breast, like, what the hell?
It's so funny.
Yeah, they tongue in cheek for this one. It's a cool game. And you know, the only thing that I lament is that because I don't have, you know, my kids being as young as they are and about to jump into this, I don't have anybody local to play this with. There's a very deep and very involved multiplayer aspect to this. You know, you can either collaborate or even, in a way, you can even work against the other players if you want to with some of the powers that the different character cards have, or the plan cards. If you draw those, whether you play them inside or outside the base, you can affect how well their game's going to go too.
Yeah, and the good thing is, for people like us that don't have friends, it does have online play.
Yes, that's true. It does have online
play. Up to 8 players, too.
Yeah, that's a pretty busy card game, really.
It is. So we're gonna have to play this together sometime.
I think absolutely.
And have mannequin boobies as my fucking phone goes off. Thank you, phone. thought I silenced you, but whatever. Son of a bitch, you.
That reminds me of better silence, man.
So overall, for $10, what do you think about Dead Exit?
I think it's pretty good, you know. The needle's somewhere between try it and buy it. Because if you're not really sold on tactical card games, you know, I don't know if this one's going to sway you, but the biggest difference to me is that you don't go on an acquisition quest to go grab the rarest and greatest cards and build, you know, monster decks. So to me, you know, it's a very level playing field if you're doing a multiplayer game where everybody has potentially the same cards, and then it's more skill driven in my view.
So it's more a card game along the lines of Uno as opposed to Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, sure. There you go. That's a fine answer. Yes. Yeah, it's more like Uno.
It's Uno with mannequins.
And zombies. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like it could be a buy it for somebody who's looking for something different as far as card games go. And it's a good price. I mean, $10 is great. So I think it's worth it.
Nice. Sounds good. Well, Royal, thank you so much for covering this one. Always good having you on the show. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break, and we are going to be back with Sanat and Mishra talking about Assault Android Cactus, finally out on Xbox One. Awesome chat, so stick around. Royal, do you have any final words?
Yeah!
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. My guest at this time, Sanatan Mishra of Witchbeam. How are you doing today, sir?
I am great.
Did I get the name right?
You did, actually. You're one of the few people who knows yes. The A is silent, so congratulations.
Well, I remember because longtime viewers may remember you. Newer viewers might not know, but you were on the show 2 years ago to talk about the game that you're here to talk about today. Back then, you were talking about the Steam version. Now today, you're going to talk about the Xbox One version, which I'm thrilled is finally happening. Assault Android Cactus. Tell us, what is this game for the people who don't know?
So Cactus is a very, very intense, pure arcade-style twin-stick shooter. It's kind of blurring the line between that Japanese style of shoot 'em up with the bullet held and then the Western style of kind of full freedom of movement and aiming in the twin-stick. And yes, it has been 2 years, which feels like a lifetime to me. I've died, been resurrected, come back, and as you were mentioning earlier, we're pretty adamant that we did not have Xbox on the cards back then, but time rolls on, opportunities arise, and now it's really happening, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's been 2 years. I remember back then you weren't too sold on Xbox. You were focused on Steam and then PS4, and I kept pushing. What about Xbox? What about Xbox?
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, we're not gonna bother. 2 years later, it's coming. Well, it's finally happening. What changed?
Well, it's more about how it started than what changed in the end. But basically, we had committed to PlayStation 4 and trying to do PlayStation Vita and Wii U as our console platforms before there was an opportunity to publish independently on the Xbox. So initially we were independent and looked at Xbox and said, hey, can we bring our game there? And they were like, well, there's not really any method for you to do that. So we committed to these other platforms, and then we were three people, and three people trying to do tons of platforms takes a long time. So it didn't happen. But years roll on, other platforms fade away, and we actually found there was an opportunity this year to work with some great developer friends of ours who made a very cool game called Ninja Pizza Girl for the Xbox One to actually get an Xbox version of Cactus out there. And we finally reached the quality bar we were hoping for. The One X was coming out where you could do a sweet 4K enhanced version, and it all just kind of matched up.
Nice. You mentioned Ninja Pizza Girl. They are no strangers to our show as well. Jason and Nicole, Disparity Games, they were on the show a year and a half ago, something like that.
Yeah, so, that sounds about right. Lovely, lovely people.
It's a close-knit community down in Australia, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, this would have been impossible without them. So if they hear this, I just want to say a huge thank you to Jason, Nicole, and the entire Stark family up in the north of Queensland.
The Starks in the north, of course.
Yes, of course.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I'm thrilled that it is finally coming to the Xbox One. In my eyes, it's been a long time coming, and I push so hard that I'm going to take full responsibility for the Xbox port finally happening. So, everyone is welcome.
That's fair enough. I think that's true. You did ask the Ninja Pizza Girl team to help us, and you did ask us to do it, and that's what happened. So ultimately, you're responsible for whatever comes out on November 7th.
Awesome. I didn't see my name in the credits though, so I'm going to break
time.
Some.
next time.
Well, next time is next time, but let's talk about now. Assault Android Cactus finally coming to the Xbox One. What is new in this version?
So the biggest change is the support for the Xbox One X and 4K resolution, which is pretty sweet if you're picking up one of those new consoles. Playing that in 4K at 60 frames per second is extremely crisp. That's the only way I could describe it. It's much crisper than I've experienced it before. But we do actually have some new content in there as well. So we worked on adding developer commentary to the game, which you can enable throughout the entire campaign of 25 levels. You can hear myself and Tim Dawson, who is the programmer, animator, artist, everything on the game, as well as Jeff Van Dyke, who did all of the lovely sound and music, talking about each level and kind of what inspired us and what we found interesting about it and how everybody needs to just get good and stop complaining about licorice. So that's in there, which is really fun. And otherwise, it's, a more refined and more polished version of the game that we've just been working on. I did actually work with the existing community of the game that the speedrunning community that ran it at Awesome Games Done Quick, or sorry, Summer Games Done Quick, I think it was, and improve the balancing to just the best degree that it's ever been at.
Nice. What is there to balance in there? Like item drops, number of bullets on sky? I don't know how you balance a bullet hell style game.
Well, one of the tricky things we found early on with balancing was that people really like patterns. They're really good at pattern recognition. So, you know, some of the bosses, we had them firing individual bullets in the hundreds of bullets range, and we thought, oh, this is really hard, this is really tricky. How do we kind of make this more interesting and also lower the difficulty? And the best way to do that was to make them fire 10 times as many bullets. So they're firing thousands of bullets, but they're firing them in extremely distinct patterns. So just as a general answer, that's one thing that I found quite interesting to balance across the game, was trying to create more of that bullet hell style dodging and less of the bullet chaos that might happen in a traditional game. But for this case, with the Xbox One version, it really was just hammering down on the individual per character balance across the game, fine-tuning the damage values. And they were very well balanced beforehand, but we're talking fine-tuned for a speedrunning community where they go, well, this character's about 2.5% faster than the other one. What are you going to do about that? And I go, well, okay, I can make some very, very fine adjustments here to help the scoring even out across the game and the speedrunning as well. So it's stuff that'll be mostly subliminal to new players, but I think it will also ease off the kind of difficulty curve and make the whole thing just really smooth across the 25-level campaign.
I love the fact that there were concerned with difficulty and balancing, and the solution was to throw more shit on the screen.
Well, of course. As long as there's a pattern and we can recognize it, we can deal with a hell of a lot more than you might think.
So do you think this is an easier to get into version than previous releases?
I wouldn't say it's easier at the baseline. I think it's just more well balanced at the top end. So as you get better at the game, the kind of things that you're doing when you're hunting down those S pluses and trying to reach the top of the leaderboard, it's going to be a little bit more fair regardless of which character you think is your favorite, because all 9 characters play very differently. So getting them to balance against each other was tricky. There is 1 or 2 tweaks from the last version you played just to the final boss, because we had any comments about the final boss, but they're very minor in nature. I think in general, this is still the true experience that everybody's had with Cactus.
Nice. You mentioned people needing to get good. You've had 2 years of people sucking at the game. How does it feel knowing that people still suck at the game?
Oh, that's a loaded question. The get good stuff was mostly in jest, if I'm being honest.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Because I'm one of those who need to get good, so.
You'll get there. The game is about building on-ramps to a skill highway, so trying to boost you piece by piece and give you every opportunity to excel without necessarily giving you kind of like hand-holding methods. So there's no grinding to get better gear or anything like that. It's a very pure arcade-style game, closer in vein, I guess, to House Marquee's work before they abandoned arcade games today, which is terribly, terribly sad.
You mean last week when they announced?
Yeah. Well, it might have been last week.
We're recording this a week ahead of schedule. Right. That doesn't
matter. My bad.
This is live. We are live right now.
I'm in Australia. It's difficult to organize these things.
That's right. You're in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I am in the future. It's currently Thursday morning at 12 p.m.
And for me, it is Wednesday night at 10 p.m. So
yeah, deal with it.
Time zones are fun.
That's how it works. Hopefully that answers some of the question before I went wildly off topic. My bad.
Well, you mentioned House Marquee. Is it House Marquee?
I honestly don't know. They're Finnish. They could tell us however it's meant.
I mean, you have a silent A at the end of your name, so I guess we can't get into pronunciation too much.
No, I can't judge anybody for anything.
But you did mention that they're getting out of arcade-style games. Do you see that being a trend? Are you worried that, like, because their games haven't been performing as well, are you worried that maybe Assault Android Cactus isn't going to meet expectations on the Xbox?
Well, I mean, our expectations are pretty low, to be honest. We have a niche of people who love these kind of games, and their love for them is so immense that it kind of powers you when it comes out, even when you see that your sales aren't going to be lighting up the charts or anything like that. I think that Housemarque's their comments that the kind of arcade scene is too small and unsustainable for a business of their size, that seems totally in line with what I've experienced with Cactus, being the quality of game that it is. Like, this is the best game I've ever made in my career, and that may not be saying much because I've made a bunch of bad games at Sega before this, but it's still the best game, and if people like it, you like it, I hope.
I do. I enjoyed it on Steam. I enjoyed it on PlayStation. Now it's coming to Xbox. I'm going to enjoy it again, God damn it.
Excellent. And it got great reviews. It got awards, all kinds of things. But these are kind of games that have a limited audience. The people that play these games, we are unfortunately not the mainstream anymore. So you do have to go in with your eyes open about that. Personally, I'm just excited that however many people find it on Xbox and try it out, I really think they're going to love it. People who like this kind of game, this is a love letter to them.
I agree. I have been singing the praises of this game since I first chatted with you. I'm actually looking it up. You were on in October of 2015, so it has been a full 2 years and almost a month afterwards. And even funnier, that was episode 129. This is episode 329, so it's fate.
It is fate. That sounds perfect.
That's pretty crazy. You know, exactly 200 episodes later.
You did bring all of this about. This is your fault.
It is my fault. And I'm proud of it being my fault. Maybe now I could get Housemarque to release their games on Xbox as well.
Oh, I think you might have to ask Sony about that one.
I thought Nex Machina, I thought that was self-published.
Oh, it might be, actually. I don't know. I mean, I don't work there, so that's just speculation. Wild, incorrect speculation, the type of which I would normally give press and players alike horrible, horrible feedback on if they did it to me.
So, how does it feel to still be working on this game 2 years later?
It's kind of weird that we had hoped to be really wrapped up on it much earlier than this and focusing on new projects, but things drag on. We spent so many years working on it, and then you need a break when things come out. I personally took a whole bunch of time where I was only working in limited capacity just because I was exhausted from pushing myself to start a business, learn everything involved in game publishing, make a really good game on top of that, and release that game on multiple platforms. As a team of three, that's really, really hard. I have no idea how the other two are still persisting, but yeah, I needed some time. And then we came back around to it. So by working with Disparity Games, that kind of took some of the pressure off that it didn't take our full attention. But it is weird to be sitting here at the end of 2017 still working on Cactus. And hopefully in another 200 episodes in 2 years when I come back on this podcast, I'll be talking about a new game.
Yes, the Switch release of Assault Android Cactus.
Yes, that's the one. 2 years from now.
Is that something you guys are looking into?
We're always looking into the different platforms. So, you know, we have dev kits for every platform that's out there, but it's a case of viability, hitting the quality that we think the game deserves. We're not interested in releasing a substandard version and the workload involved, you know, because at some point we do need to make a new game. So I'm never saying never to any platform, and you know, I still wish that we could do some of the other platforms that we talked about as well, so we'll see how that goes. But for now, I say nothing until I am absolutely definitive on things. Just like we announced this release, what was it, 2.5 weeks before it came out?
Yeah, it really was an out-of-nowhere thing. Like, there's been rumblings since, I think, over the summer. Somebody saw it listed on some kind of ratings board website, and I'm like, hey, is this actually happening? And it was still radio silence. And then just recently, hey, it's happening. It's happening on the 7th. It's happening with the launch of the X, and it's going to be a 4K title. So it really was an out-of-nowhere kind of deal.
And that's what we were going for, is just that when we can announce things, they're extremely definitive, because in the past we have announced platforms and elements for the game when they are much more tentative. And even when you sit there in 2013 and you go, oh, sweet, we're going to put this on the Wii U and it's going to be incredible. And then you look at what the game's trying to do, how the engine works, what the platform can do, and you run into problems that, you know, sometimes they're solvable with a lot of hard work, and we worked incredibly hard to reach the performance goals that we have for this game on consoles and every platform it's on. And sometimes they're just impossible to reach, and then you sit there and you're full of regret that you got people excited for something that simply can't exist. So, you know, we're much more careful now about trying to be aware of when we talk about things. It's not just a case of us being excited about something, but us being sure of something.
Mm-hmm. So are the Wii U and Vita versions pretty much gone, dead?
I mean, so officially I could say the Wii U version, that's not happening. If there's a version coming to Nintendo platforms, it would be something related to Switch if that's ever a thing. But again, that's just a total hypothetical future thing. The Vita version, it's not officially dead. It's just in kind of limbo at the moment due to difficulties. So that's our official stance. And like, as soon as we have anything more definitive to say, whether it be, hey, it's coming out next week, or hey, it's actually canceled forever, we'll let people know.
Sounds good. I know, it seems like a lot of games recently have been getting scrapped for the Vita. Do you think like that's going to be the trend from now on, of just indies starting to abandon the Vita like Sony has abandoned the Vita?
I think you'll see more people looking at Switch for their kind of lower spec handheld version of the game. If they're targeting, you know, like a 4K version on the One X or something like that as a baseline. Personally, I'd love to see more Vita games come out, because I still love my Vita, and I would still love to see my game come out on the Vita. So it makes me a little bit sad that its time is waning, but it's fairly obvious that it hasn't been a machine for new, larger releases in a couple of years now. Indies still making cool games for it, and I hope they're still finding success. I don't know a lot of Vita-specific developers, but yeah, I don't know. I don't have an opinion on whether it is dying or is dead, other than I like it, and I hope that people keep releasing cool games on it.
I agree, and it's a hell of an RPG machine.
Oh yeah, it's perfect for that. OLED.
There's so many. Oh, you have one of the older OLED models?
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's so good looking. It is so pretty. I tried playing one of the newer model Vitas, and you know, it's good. I love my Vita, but I'm sticking with my OLED model. I will never go to one of the new ones.
Yeah, it's perfect. The original Vita.
It's not as vibrant. It's not as bright. And that's what I love about the Vita. It was such a big, bright screen at the time that it stole your attention away from everything else.
And I know the newer ones are lighter weight, which is really cool, but I never had an issue with the weight of the Vita. So for me, yeah, I love my original Vita, and I hope it lasts forever.
I don't care about a lighter item. I actually have like a charge grip on my Vita just to make it bigger and have handles on it. So smaller and lighter, it just does nothing for me. I don't even know if the battery works on the chargeable grip anymore because it's so old.
Yeah, a lot of my accessories are the same way.
And it's not like they make them anymore because they don't really support the original Vita models anymore. Everything that you find, charge grips and whatever else, are all for the newer model.
The Vita 2000 or whatever it's called. I forget what the model is, but yeah.
Something like that.
I'm still tempted to get a newer model just in case mine dies, and I'll have it as a backup.
I don't know. I'm going to just have faith that this is going to be the Sony product that lasts for me.
Yeah, it should be. Plenty of PS1s out there still work. The PS2, not so much with the disc drive, but, you know, the PS1, that was a beast.
I don't know. I had problems with that, too, because of the disc drive. Like, the track that the laser was on was plastic, and people would have to flip theirs upside down for it to read games. Oh, yeah.
I've done that, actually.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Maybe they'll give us backwards compatibility one day.
Oh, God, that would be nice. So many games, over four generations of PlayStation games, and they're just locked in the past.
Look, I just know that when I boot up my Xbox One to test the retail version of Cactus, and I go, oh, yeah, let's have a look at what old games work now. And on the list I see, oh, there's Guardian Heroes and Ikaruga. Those are two of the greatest games ever made. And they're not even Xbox One games, but now they're on the Xbox One. So that makes it an amazing console.
Yeah. There's, I think, over 400 games in the backward compatibility program.
As someone who wants to sell you new games and make a living off of those new games being sold, I should probably be less excited about this. But I'm telling you, as soon as Panzer Dragoon Order is released as an Xbox original backwards compatible title, that's it. I'm done. Done.
Oh, that would be amazing if that was one of them supported.
It has to be. There has to be a Sega collection at some point. JSRF, Panzer Dragoon, Gun Valkyrie, just do them all.
Otagi, get both of those on there.
Oh, yes. Those would be fantastic.
I gotta say, as cool as the OG backward compatibility is, I'm so bummed that there were only like 13 games supported.
I think it's just the initial wave. They've got that technology. They're working on games that they had a lot more information on. Anything that Microsoft themselves published, they would have had developer tools and backends and ability to really analyze it. Just like when the original 360 backwards compatibility came out, it was mostly a bunch of Microsoft games plus one or two big third-party ones. And then over time, you look at the list now, it's a lot more all-encompassing.
True. I just worry because in their press release about the OG games, they said that we might not see another batch until spring.
Well, we don't actually have seasons in Queensland, Australia, so I assume that could be tomorrow. It's just 30 degrees here year-round. It's kind of like Florida.
Hey, that works. Then again, I'm from America, so 30 degrees to us is like freezing cold.
Yeah, I mean 30 real degrees, which I guess is close to like 100 of your real fake degrees. That's what F stands for, right? Like fake degrees, I think.
Probably.
Yeah, that's what I think. Not Fahrenheit, just fake.
And then the C stands for counterfeit.
Yes, that's exactly
right. Oh, man. So, it's getting warmer down there now because it's going into spring-ish weather on your end.
It's great. It's super hot. Every day I'm just melting and I love it.
Today it was like cold and gray and rainy and like 40 degrees American, which is, I don't know what that is, probably like 10 or something.
Doesn't even reach 10 here, I don't think, where I live. I mean, I'm in the tropics.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm in northeast Pennsylvania.
There you go. You get snow. It's great.
I like snow. I'm a fan of snow. I figure if it's cold out, you could always like put on another layer of clothing or grab a blanket or something. When you're hot, you can only take off so much clothing before you're indecent.
Yeah, that's true. But also, you can just get in the sea, in the ocean. That's amazing.
True, but I don't live by an ocean. I live by a polluted river.
Yeah, you probably don't want to get into that.
Yeah, it's not as fun as, like, the ocean and beachside paradise. I'm like...
That's... Yeah, definitely.
Susquehanna River shithole.
I think I would prefer the ocean and paradise over polluted river. So, yeah
that, that's a
that.
Tough that's call good. To make, though. Are you sure you want to go with the ocean over a polluted river?
Yes, for now.
Oh, man. So what else have you been up to in the past 2 years? Have you guys started on any kind of new projects, or has it just all been focused on getting the various versions of Cactus out?
So there is a lot of time spent on various versions of Cactus, including versions that don't exist, like the Wii U version. So, you know, you see externally that nothing happens for 6 months, and internally that's like, oh, there was time there spent on something no one will ever even know about. So that kind of took up a bunch of the time between when we last chatted and now, is trying to do these other things. But also, yeah, we've started some new prototypes. They're in the early stages. If you follow Tim Dawson's Twitter, you'll probably have seen him posting GIFs of cool little things. He's playing around with a lovely little platformer and some sword slashing games and things, but we haven't committed to any new project yet, so I'm not going to be talking about some of the other ideas we have until, again, more definitive.
Until two weeks before release.
That's right, that's right. maybe less than 2 weeks. Maybe I'll just like announce it and release it first and then announce it afterwards.
Didn't Konami do that with one of their games recently, like on Last Generation, where like the game released and people were playing it and Konami was still like, oh, we haven't announced a release date for that game?
That would have been pretty funny. I didn't hear about it, but that sounds like something Konami would do.
I'm trying to think, or no, it wasn't Konami. It was the game X-Blades.
Oh, right.
Or like the sequel, Blades of Time. That's the one it was. Blades of Time. the sequel to X-Blades, which I'm sure everybody is familiar with. You know, the longtime classic X-Blades.
Absolutely.
So that's what you have to do. You have to release the game. And then when people are like hitting you up like, hey, tell us about the game. You're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't made a new game.
That's right. Deny its existence. Claim that some other person released a game using my intellectual property.
That would actually kind of be funny.
That would work, you know. That'd go viral for all of a day until everyone was like, what are you, an idiot?
I think he's going insane. He might be senile. We're not sure what the issue is.
He could be.
He definitely made a new game and it's out. And he's saying he didn't. Liar.
But I think if I made a new game, I wouldn't be able to contain it. I'd have to shout it from the rooftops if it actually came out, because releasing a game is one of the hardest things you'll ever do. Denying that would just crush my soul.
Well, now you can shout from the rooftops the Cactus is on Xbox.
It's pretty sweet. I'm very happy with it. I'm super happy with how it came together and just how high quality it is as a version as well. We worked very, very hard to make sure that it was worth everybody's time and attention. And you know what? I hope that people like it. I think that they will. I think people who are into shoot 'em ups and twin sticks and very pure arcade style gameplay wrapped in like a modern kind of approach to action and aesthetics and other things like that will have a really great time with Cactus.
I hope so, because I've really enjoyed it. And I know Housemark released their statement about arcade games not doing well, but I feel between Assault Android Cactus and the guys at 10 Tons who have put out games like Neon Chrome and Judge just came out recently, I think twin stick shooters are still alive and well and doing pretty good.
Well, it's about to find out, so I hope you're correct.
I'll keep the faith alive. It's got to stay alive.
I mean, it was your idea to do this port, so
it was. If it again, does perform entirely poorly. Entirely my idea, 100%.
No. So, you know, if things go wrong, I know who to blame.
100% me. I'll take all the blame because nobody gives a shit about me.
That sounds legitimate. Thank you. Thanks for opting in.
Oh, man. So what is the difference from working on the game to working on a 4K version of the game? What differences are there?
You just have to type a capital P when you ever use the word crisp, right? I'm pretty sure that's the main difference. So that people know you mean really crisp. Not just crisp like, you know, what the British call those chips or whatever, but crisp with a capital P. That's the main difference. You have to consider a few other things too. So you really have to start thinking about any kind of visual overlays and performance and some kind of construction happening outside. So there's a lot of like performance and game visual related stuff you have to consider. The extra detail people can see is tricky. So thinking about what works and what doesn't and what you can kind of get away with. But by and large, it's mostly just about making sure your game performs well and making sure that everything is super crisp.
Does it require you creating like new assets for the game or redrawing any kind of assets?
Well, in our case, we didn't actually need to do that. So we probably could have done that if we'd had a ton more time and money and sense and built some of these things with the intention of 4K originally. So I'll be brutally honest, some scenes are noticeably, you can start to see some of the flaws that are invisible in lower resolutions in when you're really close up to some elements in the game. But a lot of our other content, like the way that the camera sits in a typical level is zoomed out at a nice level. The texture detail and the quality of the assets was already so high for like the enemies and the stages that at that zoom level, they really come to life in 4K. So like when you're in a cutscene and you're staring at a character's face that was never intended to be seen like this, yeah, that you'll notice this. They're not really designed for 4K, but the general gameplay, it looks incredible, and I'm so happy with how it came about.
That sounds like when I played Mark of Kree on the PS4, the PS2 classic, where like the game itself was crisp with like the capital P. Everything was gorgeous, fluid, and then it had the pre-rendered cutscenes, and they were like 480i shit quality.
Well, luckily our cutscenes are not pre-rendered, so they are also 4K real-time cutscenes, which is nice. It's just that in some cases when you're really zoomed right in on things with that many pixels, because we're talking about an absurd resolution increase, there's just, yeah, you can notice some of the flaws a little bit more. But, oh my gosh, during gameplay, with the effects and everything going off, it's just incredible.
Especially if you put the JJ filter on.
Oh yeah, then you get the lens flares.
Oh my god, I played earlier today. I've had, what, like 2-3 hours hands-on time with the game by now, and the first thing I did when I had the credits was buy the JJ filter. Holy shit, it looks crazy.
That's good. I'm glad that that's the takeaway, because, you know, I mean, not that we're referencing any real-world person who may or may not make cool Star Wars movies, but, you know, some directors really love the lens flare. What can I say? And we wanted to capture that feel.
It's clearly not J.J. Abrams. It's Jay Allard from Microsoft. Remember the bald guy?
Yeah, Jay Allard. That guy. He just loves the lens flare.
It's the Jay Allard filter. The J.J. Allard filter.
That's so good.
Oh, man. Will the 4K updates be hitting any other platforms, or is it pretty much just going to be on Xbox?
So for now, everything is just on Xbox, but we'll be looking at bringing the content like developer commentary to other platforms later. It's really a tricky thing of depending on what the workload is and how long it takes us and kind of what's involved. We've been so busy with the Xbox version. And again, I just want to iterate to people, we're three people plus one person from Disparity Games helping us out on this version. So doing everything simultaneously is just not feasible for us. We kind of have to focus on one thing at a time. And so, yeah, I don't have anything to say about other platforms and patches yet, but, you know, we'd like to make sure that everyone gets the best version of Cactus.
Did you guys ever do a PS4 Pro upgrade for the game?
Not yet, no. That's something that we're definitely investigating.
Nice, yeah. I know a couple of games have come out with patches and upgrades, and I'm not sure what kind of differences there are between the Pro and the Xbox One X, so I wasn't sure if you guys had any hands-on time trying to see the difference between those two platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's pretty straightforward difference if you look at the tech specs and things that are out on the internet. They're both designed for people to get a really nice resolution bump for their high-end TVs, though, which is really cool. I have a PS4 Pro myself. I'll be getting a 1X after it comes out, and I can get a regular retail human version.
Oh, you mean today?
Yes. Well,
because it just released today. Like, mine's hooked up right now, obviously.
Nice.
Clearly, I think.
I approve. Yes. I mean, I could be in the past. You don't know what time zone I'm in. I pretend to be in Australia, but it could be anywhere.
You're in New Zealand, so that changes everything.
It does. Absolutely. So, yeah, I think, you know, the specs are out there. I don't really have much of a comment on it other than, like, I will try and make the best version of the game for any platform we release it on. So hopefully we can investigate and do a really cool update for that at some point. But I don't know. I won't commit to anything until we're able to.
2 weeks away. 2 weeks away.
Yeah, 2 weeks. That's the deadline.
Does the Steam version have any kind of 4K aspects to it?
Well, you can run whatever resolution you want on the PC version. So if you have a super-powered computer, you could theoretically run it in 4K, but you'll be lacking, like, the developer commentary and the kind of updates and game balancing that we did for the Xbox version. So those are things, again, that at some point in the future we'd love to bring back and support on those platforms.
So what kind of fun stuff is in the developer commentary? How does that work in a video game? In a movie, it's, you know, you start a movie and it's the same experience every time. With games, it changes, you know, on a play-by-play basis. How do you do commentary for something like that?
In this case, we sat down on a couch at Jeff's house and kind of played through and watched the entire game and just chatted about the game together. So it's super casual. It is very much in the style of DVD commentary. They might be a little bit longer or a little bit shorter than each level, but you can just sit there and listen to it at the end if it overlaps your play session. We won't be commentating on what you're doing so much as what we find interesting about the level, with a reasonable expectation that we know what's happening since we know how the levels play out. And it's just us, like, shooting the breeze and kind of discussing stuff that we found exciting. like weird inspirations or thought processes, or Jeff laughing because I asked him a question on level one and he wasn't prepared to actually say anything yet. So he just kind of laughs at me for 10 seconds. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens in the developer commentary. It is so casual and relaxed. We wanted to emulate exactly that feel of kind of the DVD developer commentary.
Nice. That should be one of the bullet points for the developer commentary. 10 seconds of Jeff's laughter.
It's pretty great. I'm like, Jeff, do you have any comment on this thing? And he just bursts out because he's not prepared.
I'm going to have to try out the commentary. I wasn't sure how it worked, so I didn't want to do anything yet and like see if I fuck something up or like it. I one of my questions was going to be like, what if you finish a stage before you guys are done talking? And you already answered that one. So you're ahead of me.
Yeah, it just plays out. So if you have developer commentary enabled, which you can do at any time in the main game menu, it'll just play the commentary for every level as you play them, regardless of whether it's played before. And then you can just go turn it off if you don't want to hear us jabbering on anymore.
Are there any alternate commentary tracks, any kind of crazy Easter eggs? Like if you play the game on a certain date at a certain time, a completely different commentary track pops up?
Unfortunately not. It is just the one set of commentary across all 25 levels. So hopefully that's enough for you, commentary fiend, if that's what you're really into.
That's what game patches are for. You're going to sneak something in there.
Yeah, that's right. I'll do a secondary commentary update where I just phase out Tim and Jeff and it's me only.
So I would, if I did a game and I had commentary like that, I would have some kind of crazy commentary track that only played before release. So if people somehow got their hands on the game before it came out, they just hear you saying like, how do you have this game? Like, it's not out yet. What are you doing? Did you steal this? Are you stealing from me? Like threaten his life, stuff like that.
That's probably a pretty good idea. I should have done that next time.
Or like on Christmas, the entire time you're playing, it's the same commentary from every other time, just with sleigh bells over top.
Yeah, well, like Christmas Nights did that, right? In fact, on the Saturn, you had all kinds of things that unlocked on Christmas Day and different weird stuff. I would totally make a game like that sometime. That sounds great.
Yeah, like Calendar Man in the Arkham games.
You just need a lot of spare time to implement a ton of complex content that only maybe three people on Earth will ever see.
Something else I would be dumb enough to do would be like I would record a commentary track and then, like, wait a minute or two, so everyone who normally played the game thinks it's over, but if someone's, like, really bad at the game, they'll just hear you guys come back like, oh my god, you're still playing.
I feel like you should record some optional commentary for other people's games of just, like, yourself talking about it, and then pitch it to them.
Send me a playthrough that you guys are going off of for your commentary, and I'll record commentary for your game with the Christmas patch with the sleigh bell music.
Exactly. Then they have their own commentary for the regular human beings, and then they switch on your commentary when they detect the ID of your console system. And exactly. You think that it's, you know, everybody's getting it, but alas.
They're like, who the hell is this guy, and why is he in this game?
Perfect.
It would be perfect. I did movie commentary for a movie I had nothing to do with, and that was pretty fun.
See?
So I totally have the experience required to do game commentary on a game I had nothing to do with, except...
This is just the next-gen version of that.
Yeah, see? Then again, I'm the one who ended up getting it on Xbox One, clearly. So I guess I did have something to do with the game.
Yeah, you could just tell that story in every level, be like, are you playing this on Xbox One right now?
Because if you are, thank me. I have a story for you. See, back in October of 2015...
Well, back in my day, I did a show called the SML Podcast, and I had some people on talking about this here game that you're playing right now. 2 years later, boom.
Miracles happen.
Oh, my.
Oh, I need help.
I think you are the help.
Oh, man. So what have you been playing lately? When you're not, you know, neck deep and getting Cactus working on the Wii U and on the Dreamcast, what games have you been playing?
Oh, I've played way too much of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I'm so sorry. It's the most generic answer you'll ever hear, but it's a very good game. What can I say? And I don't even like those kind of games. So for me to be that addicted to it is wild.
I've watched so many people play it, and I hear everyone talk about how amazing the game is. And because my PC is just awful, I haven't played the game yet. So I'm very much looking forward to the game coming out on Xbox this year.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, you should give it a go when it comes out. I'm an old school Operation Flashpoint fan. So I've been playing these kind of weird simulation shooters for what feels like forever now. And it's cool to see them finally hitting the mainstream with a version that's simplified enough that it's not too crazy complicated, but still offering all the fun stuff that these games do. Things like the fact that they simulate the bullets, so you have bullet lead and it's not just hit scan, you know, all this kind of thing that adds to the feeling of weight and dynamics in the game. It's so cool.
It's just such a fun game to watch too. I could sit down and watch a streamer play round after round after round, because it's just so goofy and weird. And every now and then you'll see a crazy ass glitch that just has you rolling with laughter.
Yeah, it's very dynamic. And that's one of its biggest strengths, I think, is almost every time you watch it, it feels like a different experience, which is so cool. Other than that, I played Sonic Mania to my heart's content, and that game is just incredible. What a masterstroke. I can't believe someone who isn't Sonic Team, which I guess there's no real Sonic Team anymore, came out and created the best Sonic game that there is.
So I'm not surprised, because Sonic Team has been so bad in recent years that I think anybody could have made a better Sonic game than them lately.
That's true, but this is a game that holds up to my personal favorite, which is Sonic 2. I'm not sure which of the two is better. That's how good Sonic Mania is.
That is high praise.
It's just brilliant. Everything about it feels like somebody going back and mining the most creative elements out of what Sonic was and putting it all into one experience. It's really beautiful.
That's crazy. This year in general has been crazy with games, because we have like the best Sonic game in recent memory, possibly ever. We have the greatest Zelda game of recent memory, if not ever. And then just recently we got probably one of the greatest Mario games ever made.
Don't say anything, because I haven't started it yet.
You haven't started yet? Man.
That's my game. That's my next game.
Did you pick it up yet, at least?
I'm going to get it digitally when I'm ready to go. I'm just going to download it. So I don't have it on my Switch right now, because I figure as soon as I download it, that's it. I'm done. No more promoting Cactus. No more going on podcasts. No more Xbox release. Just, you know, that's the end for me.
I don't know. That might be a fun episode of a show where I'm doing interviews with people and everybody is just playing Mario Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. If I had it right now, I'd be playing it as I'm talking to you.
That would be a good concept episode.
I'm thinking about playing it right now as I'm talking to you. Why am I even talking to you?
I don't know.
I could be playing Mario right now.
If nothing else, you could be downloading Mario right now.
Exactly. I've wasted my life.
So clearly the challenge is to start the download now, buy the game and download it now. And as soon as it finishes downloading, you're like, all right, game's done. I'm out. And just hang up.
That's how I should treat this. I should just do that exactly. But I don't have a Switch within grasp, so I'm trapped eternally on SML Podcast.
I don't know about eternally. I wouldn't want to be here forever either. Fuck that.
Temporarily, then.
So are you a Switch fan? Are you enjoying it?
I love my Switch. It's great. And I'm super happy that it offers a completely different experience to what I can get on my PS4 or my Xbox. And it kind of leaves room for all of them to exist, which is rad.
It does. And it's exciting to see how well it's been taking off as well. It seems the games are selling really well. The system is selling really well. Indies have been flocking to it. So I do expect to see Cactus on there in 2 years.
In 2 years, yep. Book it.
And we'll hear about it in a year, 11 months, and 2 weeks.
Exactly. You got the timeline down now. No, it's incredible. It's such a unexpected delight, is how I describe the Switch. You wonder if it's going to be everything that it's cracked up to be when it was announced, when they showed it. You're like, oh, this is interesting, but like, what's it actually going to feel like? And you know what? It just feels great. It's great on my TV. It's great in my hands. I like it. I switch it back and forward. I've had Switch parties where people come around and we play network-linked Mario Kart, and that's not something I've done in a decade, at least.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
So, yeah, I love the Switch. I'm all about it.
Were there any good Mario Kart games at any conventions you've been to recently?
Sadly, my convention life is typically one where I'm working it, so I don't get too much time to sit down and play. But I did see a large number of people with Switches in the handheld area of PAX Australia just chilling out.
I feel bad for all the people who, like, go to these events for Street Pass hits on their 3DS, and now everyone just has a Switch with them instead.
Yeah, I guess you could bring both, but I don't see the need to bring my 3DS with me now that I have a Switch. I know they're technically meant to serve different markets, but the Switch is just, it's better. It's better.
It is. It is such a good system.
It's perfect.
It's
a handheld, it's a console.
Are you Team Gray or Team Neon?
I have Neon and additional controllers, so I have all of them.
Nice. Team Neon is the way to be.
Of course. It's a toy. It's for fun.
And they're pretty.
What are you going to take it? Are you going to take it into a boardroom and be upset, like embarrassed by your Neon controllers? First of all, what kind of boardroom is that where they let you have a Switch? But second of all, you know, accept that you have an awesome console and they need to be Neon.
Very true. Very true. So any other games coming out this year you're looking forward to or coming out early next year?
I also need to pick up Wolfenstein. I think that looks fantastic. It's out already, which is cool. So any time now, I guess. Have you played it?
I have not played it, but I did pick it up. I ended up going with the collector edition with like the G.I. Joe style action figure.
Nice.
It is so cool. It's like a foot tall, or what is that? I don't know how many centimeters that is.
It ticks all the boxes for me, though. It goes, all right, apparently it has really great shooting mechanics, which is nice. You get to shoot a lot of Nazis, which is going to be very cathartic.
Always a positive.
I know, it's always a positive, as it was in every Wolfenstein game so far. And as a bonus, it's a single-player-focused, full-on, narrative-heavy first-person shooter. How often do they roll around in this world of single-player stuff is dead or whatever is happening? So, yeah, I'm super keen to play through Wolfenstein, and I've heard nothing but good things. The reviews are incredible.
It's good stuff. Bethesda's been doing really good this year, and I'm excited to see what they start doing with the Switch. I know I'm eager to pick up Skyrim on the Switch because I need to have Legend of Zelda items in Skyrim.
That's the justification for a new Skyrim version.
It really is. That's my justification. I have Zelda items, and I could play it on the road.
Hey, is someone releasing a port of his game to a new platform? I shouldn't judge, but come on, Skyrim, when are they going to stop?
Never. Probably never. Yeah.
Probably never.
I don't know. There's just something cool about having a game on a handheld style system that you wouldn't expect to have on the road. Like, not many people would expect to ever be able to play Skyrim in a car.
It's pretty amazing. And it should be a good fit as well for technology-wise. It should be one of the best versions of Skyrim. So, you know, I think it's pretty cool. If you're into Skyrim, that's going to be the version to play. I am a little bit more of a Morrowind fan, the more of the classic Elder Scrolls style games. If they brought Morrowind to the Switch, I would be there day one for any absurd collector's edition, no matter the cost.
I was really hoping Morrowind was going to be one of the games on Xbox One with the OG games.
Oh, that would be fantastic, because I actually have it. I have a disc for it.
Me too.
That's how I played.
I have the Game of the Year edition, and my biggest takeaway from Morrowind back years ago when I tried playing it was the loading times were insane in that game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You had to suffer for your art back then.
Literal minutes of loading time.
Yeah. And then you had to travel all the time, too, so you're always... I think like half the game was basically loading screens, if I remember correctly. But it was so good, I didn't care.
When I first played it, I couldn't really do first-person games. Like, a decade ago, my body couldn't handle first-person games. I would just get motion sick. And I heard so much good about Morrowind that I picked it up, and I'm like, well, I'm going to give this game a shot. So I started the game, then the loading screen started, and I sat there, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And after what felt like an eternity, the game finally loaded, and I had no idea what I was doing in the game, and I died within like 2 minutes. And then it loaded again. So I got up, I legitimately made a sandwich, put everything away, sat down on the couch, ate my sandwich, and it was still loading.
Yeah, but you had a good sandwich. They gave you that.
They did. That was quality time. Oh, man. Can you imagine if a game came out these days with loading times like Morrowind had?
Yeah, you'd eat a lot more sandwiches.
then again, we have cell phones now. So you could just
that
like,
does change things. You can play a mini game.
Yeah. Or we have a Switch now, so you could just play the Switch while it loads. Oh,
options.
Man.
Options and opportunities.
Oh, man. Well, I know you've been on the show for a while now. I don't want to eat up all of your day. Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss?
No, I think we kind of covered it. We briefly chatted about it. If you want to find out more information about Cactus, feel free to Google any combination of the words Assault, Android, and Cactus. I guarantee no one else is silly enough to name their game something like that. Plenty of videos and reviews and information out there. There will be a 30-minute free trial on Xbox as well. So you don't even need to buy it, and that's just ongoing. You download it and you get access to the full game for 30 minutes. So
that's a pretty solid trial length too. I've seen some trials that were like 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a bit too brutal for my liking. I think 30 minutes is enough to get a taste for the game.
Half hour is pretty solid. Will people be able to unlock achievements during the trial? Because I know some games allow that.
It should be. It's just the operating system level trial, so we're not doing a custom one of any kind. I think it treats it that during that half an hour, you essentially own the game.
Mm.
So you can unlock anything, you can make saves, and then if you liked it enough, you just buy it and roll on.
Nice. Well, how much is the game?
It's going to be $15 US or $14.99 if you want to save a cent, because that's probably the actual price. It's so different, the mental block between the two, apparently. You can check that out, and that'll be spread to different pricing factors depending on where you live on this glorious planet. Available pretty much everywhere except for places like Japan and China and other regions that I didn't get ratings and stuff for.
Are you going to try getting in those regions?
Probably not on the Xbox. I don't know if there's a huge market for this kind of game there, and the amount of work required to get those ratings and release in those regions is not insignificant.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so we're doing 35 regions. It should be everywhere across Europe and America and like Australia and places like that.
That is a lot of regions. So
yeah, you can't do everything all the time.
Yeah, and no one in Asia gives a shit about Xbox anyway. Let's be honest.
Oh, brutal! I like to think there's some people who care, but
there's like 100.
It's just a significant amount of work to go and get, you know, your Stero rating and publishing and this and that, and we focused on what we could do, which was the 35 regions we're really seeing.
Makes sense. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure getting you back on. I'm gonna have to get you back on again earlier than 2 years.
I think earlier than 2 years makes sense. Maybe 1 year, 11 months and 2 weeks. Just book it now, because you know that's when something's going to release, right?
Sounds good. So mid-October 2019, you will be back on the show long as I'm still doing it, but I have nothing else going on in my life, so I'm sure I will.
Yeah, and me either. I'll have nothing else going on, so you know, we can both just be hanging out just like this.
I'll be creeping up on getting close to episode 500. That'll be fun.
Excellent.
So, thank you so much for coming on. It's been fantastic getting you back. The game is Assault Android Cactus, finally out on Xbox One for $15. Do you have any final words to end the show?
G'day, mate. I don't know. That was the most Australian thing I could think of to say, so there you go.